Hi, I'm Anthony Stalter. Welcome to 4-for-4 Fantasy Football's Most Accurate Podcast. As always, I'm joined by 4-for-4 Senior Editor John Paulson, who was named the Most Accurate Expert of 2010 and 2014 by Fantasy Pros. He's the only expert to win the competition twice, and he's finished in the top five in five of the last six seasons. John, how are we doing today?
Doing great. The draft's over, which, you know, I'm excited about, and we can start the fantasy season. That's an unofficial start to the fantasy season, so I'm excited. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Before we welcome Brandon Isles back to the podcast, you heard him last week in our pre-draft podcast. We got him back for the post-draft podcast. John, why don't you tell us a little bit about the music?
Yes, Ray La Montagne, I think that's pronouncing that correctly, his 2016 album, Ouroboros, and it's this number two track, Hey No Pressure. I think you're going to like it, Anthony.
Cool. We got a nice guitar riff.
Yep.
Excellent.
You know it.
You always speak to my heart there with those guitar riffs.
I try.
Once again, we do have Brandon Isles on the podcast to recap the NFL draft. He's the co-host of the Two Guys podcast and contributed to all 3 days of our 4-for-4's draft coverage this year. Brandon, welcome back. An outstanding job to both you and John last week during those 3 days.
Thanks for having me. I sure had fun over the weekend, and I'm excited to be back today.
Excellent. Well, John, you wrote an article. You discussed which fantasy football rookies will make an immediate impact, and that is going to be the basis of our podcast today. Let's go through position by position, talk about the rookies that are likely to make a fantasy impact in 2016, and we'll try to hit on, if you haven't read the article yet, most of the big names, the bolded names. And, John, you mentioned in the article that about four rookies per year finish with fantasy starter type numbers. And why don't you dive into the position groups that, you know, mainly quarterback and tight end, running back and wide receiver. But there's going to be more flex caliber players probably than fantasy relevant players. But why don't you go ahead and talk first and foremost about the basis of your article?
Yeah, there will be more player rookies that make an impact this year, but it won't necessarily mean they're going to be every day or every week starters for you. And I average about four per year do start. When we say starters, I'm talking about the top 12, finished as the top 12 quarterback or top 12 tight end, or finished in the top 24 and at running back or receiver. Obviously, you get into flex, and if you're just looking at players that might be on your bench, you can definitely add some more rookies to that mix, and there definitely will be some rookies this year that more than four that end up in that mix. So I think if we just want to start with the quarterback position, I don't know how Brandon feels, but given the state of the position, it's really deep in terms of productive fantasy quarterbacks out there. I don't really see much of a need to be targeting Jared Goff, who's going to the Rams, or Paxton Lynch, who's going to the Broncos and competing with Mark Sanchez here for a starting job. Carson Wentz going to the Eagles. He's got Sam Bradford he's got to deal with. So of those three guys, I think Goff is your safest bet because he's going to start immediately, but I don't think he's going to be anything more than a QB2 streaming option. What do you think, Brandon?
I agree completely. And, you know, for years now, we've been talking about waiting on a quarterback. That strategy seems like it's going to hold true again this year, and it makes rookies even less valuable, like you say. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I would say if you look at Jameis Winston, he did finish 13th last year. That was a really good rookie season, and some of that came from all the rushing touchdowns he had. But that was kind of a surprise, but he was landing in a good spot, and I think Paxton Lynch has that type of receiving talent there with Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. So these guys could end up in the streaming conversation, but I just don't think you'd really want to draft any of these guys on draft day.
I don't disagree with you guys. I think Jared Goff is going to have the most opportunities, which, John, you alluded to, out in Los Angeles, but he's playing for a head coach that wants to run the football. And when you have Todd Gurley in your backfield and absolutely no wide receivers, at least no trustworthy wide receivers, it makes sense to get the ball into Todd Gurley's hands as much as possible. I'm going to avoid all these guys on draft day as well. I think Christian Hackenberg may have an opportunity to start with the Jets, assuming they don't sign Ryan Fitzpatrick. But even with Hackenberg and maybe the amount of opportunities that he's going to have, he's got a huge learning curve stepping up from Penn State to the NFL. Well, guys, I think we can all agree we can kind of roll on then and talk about the running backs. While we all agreed that the quarterback spot, you may not target any of these guys, you probably won't target any of those guys in the draft, Not the case with Ezekiel Elliott, who, Brandon, he winds up in an absolute perfect spot in Dallas behind that big offensive line.
Couldn't be a better spot for him going to a team with that type of an offensive line and an offense built around it. Tony Romo and Dez Bryant should be healthy going into the season, so you're not going to be able to stack eight men in the box like the running backs in Dallas faced last season for the most part. So Zeke Elliott, love that guy. We talked about him last week, just how legit he is, and boy, it's just a marriage made in heaven with him going to Dallas.
John, what do you think of Ezekiel Elliott's draft spot? Do you think he might be overdrafted at some point?
Well, I just started a hashtag MFL 10 of Pain draft with a bunch of industry guys, and he went with the third pick to Evan Silva. And wow. I think that if he hadn't gone third, he would have gone fourth to Sigmund Bloom, who's a big Ezekiel Elliott fan. I will definitely have him in my top 10, probably my top 7 or 8 running backs this year. I'm working on my projections right now, so it's a little strange to be drafting, but I wanted to get a draft under my belt and kind of get a little plan going. I think Elliott is in a great situation, as Brandon said. I mean, you look at what the Cowboys have done over the last 2 years. Obviously, going back 2 years to the 2014 season when DeMarco Murray had that huge year, kind of inflates those numbers a little bit. But I would say that Elliott is better than the Darren McFadden, Joseph Randall combination that they used last year. So I wouldn't be surprised if the running game increases its production. And if you look at him with 50% of the production, you're talking about 249 touches for 1,300 yards, 6 touchdowns, and those are low end RB1 numbers. If you increase that to 60%, you're looking at 299 touches for 1,575 yards and 7.2 touchdowns. If you're just averaging the Cowboys' production from the last 2 years, so. I'm thinking he'll probably be in that 60% area, given the draft pick that they used on him. Obviously, he's going to be the workhorse back. So the question is, rookie Wall, is he going to hit it? Will you be able to count on him in the fantasy playoffs? And TJ Hernandez and Chris Raybon have done a little bit of work with the rookie Wall for running backs, workhorse running backs. Do they continue to produce down the stretch? And we're going to be releasing an article here in the next week or two. That basically shows that the rookie running backs do continue to produce in the fantasy playoffs, so it's not a concern really heading into 2016 for Ezekiel Elliott.
And, you know, to add to that, John, he played 15 games. Ezekiel Elliott played 15 games for Ohio State 2 years ago when they won the national championship. He played 13 last year with the bowl game. So at least with him, you know that he did play more because of the playoffs and the championship game for Ohio State than maybe some of these other backs. And it'll be interesting to see what the numbers bear out when you guys kind of dive into whether or not there is a rookie Wall. Let's move on. Let's talk about Derrick Henry. He goes to the Titans. We know that Tennessee traded for DeMarco Murray in the offseason, and apparently the Titans reached out to DeMarco Murray, Mike Mularkey did, and said that, hey, you're still our workhorse guy. You're still our number one back. So it doesn't look like, for at least at the start of the season, guys, that Derrick Henry is going to receive a ton of playing time. Might be in a running back by committee, Brandon.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't think of a worse spot for him. I don't know why Tennessee decided to draft him. I guess maybe they were so unhappy with the running backs that they had in previous seasons, specifically last year, that they felt they needed to have some depth at the position. But I was really disappointed seeing Henry go to a place where I don't think he's going to get a dozen carries a game, which is what I thought he might do as a two-down back somewhere. So, yeah, I was disappointed to see that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bad spot for him. I think everybody – when that pick was made, everybody in the fantasy community anyway was raising their eyebrows or shaking their head, wondering why they would draft him. Given the holes that they have on their team, plus the move they made to pick up Murray, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
And as we talk about the other running backs that were drafted, the Dolphins selected Kenyon Drake with the number 73 overall pick. Now, he was in a timeshare at Alabama with not only Derrick Henry, but also T.J. Yeldon the year prior. So, Brandon, he's going to a spot where Jay Ajayi is the number one back in Miami. He's likely to be the one to get the most carries. I wouldn't think that Drake is going to carve out a huge role for himself as a rookie in Miami.
I agree. I'm actually more inspired by Jay Ajayi now. You know, we saw the Dolphins during free agency go after guys like C.J. Anderson. They let Lamar Miller go, but they were going after running backs. They brought in Chris Johnson for, to look at. So I think that drafting a guy who's a pass catcher and kind of a dynamic playmaker in a third down role, I think is kind of a boost of confidence to Jay Ajayi and that he might get the kind of touches that I was hoping to see from him under Adam Gase.
I think Drake has a chance, though, to be a Charles Sims type, though, in PPR leagues. If we see it in the preseason where he's pretty active and catching three or four passes per game, he could be a theoretic Charles Sims type in PPR formats. You could draft him pretty late.
Speaking of that, John, what do you think of C.J. Proceis going to Seattle? Kind of the same idea with Thomas Rawls, not only coming off the injury, but both him and Christian Michael, they're not necessarily third-down passing backs. And John Schneider, the general manager there, has already noted that C.J. Proceis will likely fill that role for Seattle as a rookie.
Yeah, the Seahawks don't throw a ton to their running backs, so I'm a little bit less inclined to go that route. And, you know, Rawls wasn't terrible in that area of the game last year. So, I'm more excited about Drake than I am Proceis at this point.
Brandon, any thoughts on C.J. Proceis out of Notre Dame?
I think eventually he'll mold into that receiving back role. He's big enough to be an every down guy, but he's a converted receiver, so that's got to be what Seattle was thinking. I'd agree with John, though. You know, Seattle doesn't put up enough passing stats for me to think that enough receptions are going to go around to give C.J. Proceis enough fantasy stats if he's not getting a dozen carries to go with his receptions. So, I'd have to agree with John.
And then, let's ping pong back to you for a second. Kenneth Dixon goes to Baltimore. That's a crowded backfield, but he's an intriguing player. 5'10", 215. He absolutely racked up all kinds of yards at Louisiana Tech. You think he could maybe carve out a role for himself if Justin Forsett doesn't rekindle that magic that we saw from a couple years ago?
Wouldn't surprise me at all. Baltimore's looking for weapons, right? They keep bringing guys in, and the guys don't quite pan out. Justin Forsett put together about a year and a half, but he's over 30. He's on the wrong side of 30. Buck Allen looked pretty good, but he couldn't hold on to the football. Kept getting benched due to fumbling problems. Lorenzo Taliaferro, he's a big bruising back, but he's coming off an injury just like Forsett is. Wouldn't shock me at all to see Kenneth Dixon earn some time and actually do really well with it.
Yeah, I was just pulling up Dixon's ADP in MFL 10s, and it's actually down since the end of the draft, which kind of surprises me because this is a pretty good landing spot for him, all things considered. I mean, he does have some work to do to earn some snaps, but, Forsett's old. Javorius Allen, Buck Allen is pretty good, but he's not like the heir apparent necessarily or the stud that's going to be the running back of the future there. So Dixon has a chance, and I know the analytics people really like him.
I like Paul Perkins, UCLA running back. He winds up going to the Giants in the fifth round. I don't think he should have lasted that long. He is a three-down back. And, Brandon, he goes to a perfect spot in New York. Nobody is really jumping off the depth chart for the Giants at the running back position. Maybe Paul Perkins does something his rookie year.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he replaces both Rashad Jennings and Shane Vereen. I don't know how much of an impact he's going to have as a rookie, but I think he'll be given that opportunity. Right now, they've got one guy running inside and one guy taking care of third downs. Paul Perkins can do both in a very successful way. He can catch the ball pretty well for a back. So wouldn't be shocked at all if the Giants decided that Paul Perkins was worth a run. And they've been known to give the hot hand, give carries to the hot hand. So if Perkins gets hot early, I could see him not letting up.
Yeah, it's not a guy I'm going out to target, but in drafts. But if he's there real late, maybe grab him. I mean, if you remember last year, the Giants had a four running back committee going, and it was not much fun from a fantasy perspective. The only guy that was really producing semi-consistent numbers was Vereen in PPR formats. So I think definitely if you look at the summer and he has a really, really good summer, there's a chance that he could win that job outright.
And finally, we'll talk a little bit about Jordan Howard, the Indiana running back who goes to Chicago. Brandon, I thought you mentioned something earlier about Jay Ajayi and feeling better about him after what the Dolphins did in the draft. I kind of feel the same way about Jeremy Langford now in Chicago because the Bears only added Jordan Howard. No knock on Howard, but he's more of a straight line back. I highly doubt he's going to challenge Langford for that starting role.
Yeah, I would think he's more of a candidate to challenge Kadeem Carey for the backup role, because Carey was supposed to be the heir apparent to Forte, got beat out pretty much by Langford last year, and now I think they're looking for a little power in their backup. So I'd agree with you.
Yeah, I think Langford is going to be better than people. I know it was a big knock on his yards per carry last year, but he was, from a fantasy standpoint, he was really productive due to all the touches and volume that he was getting. And there is history showing that rookie running backs with low yards per carry can improve significantly in the second season. So I'm not down on him like everybody else is.
Let's go to wide receivers now, gentlemen. We'll start off with the first wide receivers. Did I say running backs or wide receivers? I meant wide receivers if I didn't. Let's go to wide receivers and talk about the first wideout off the board, who is Corey Coleman from Cleveland. I don't know if you guys are going to disagree with me on this because of the opportunity there in Cleveland and the fact that Hugh Jackson's now the OC, but I would caution fantasy owners for going out there and maybe investing in Corey Coleman. You're tantalized by the highlight video, but when you think about the jump that he has to make going from Baylor to an NFL offense, he didn't have a full route tree while at Baylor. He was basically a guy that they manufactured touches for, and that's what Hugh Jackson's going to have to do in Cleveland for Coleman. The athleticism is off the charts, Brandon, but I kind of see a little bit of Tavon Austin. A much bigger Tavon Austin, but modeled after that same way where the OC there is going to have to really manufacture those looks for him.
I can see that. I'm a little more excited about Corey Coleman than most. I see a little Steve Smith Sr. in him. He's got that tenacity, and I think that even though his stats are probably inflated from Baylor, his across-the-middle running is going to come purely from his intensity. I think he's going to learn to run those routes because he's going to want to score every time he touches the ball, and he's going to think that that's the way it goes. But that being said, he's going to a team that historically hasn't been exactly a gold mine for fantasy. I know Josh Gordon was great there for a while, but until we see what RG3 can do under Hugh Jackson and new offensive coordinator Pep Hamilton, I'm concerned about trying to really target or go after anybody in that Cleveland offense.
Yeah, he's starting to go around pick 82, 83. That sounds like a pretty steep price to pay for a rookie in that pass offense. And I do feel like Josh Gordon won't play, but it's no guarantee that he doesn't play. And if he does play, it's really going to put a huge dent in all the upside for Coleman.
I will say this, playing into your optimism though, Brandon, Hugh Jackson, significantly better when it comes to designing plays to get the ball into a guy like Coleman's hands than Brian Schottenheimer, Rob Boris, Jeff Fisher, we're at getting the ball into Tavon Austin's hands, so that is one positive for Corey Coleman. Let's talk about Laquon Treadwell. I absolutely love him coming out of Ole Miss. People were down on him because of the 40 time. I think he's a solid possession receiver. Brandon, you and I both thought that he kind of looks like Roddy White. And Minnesota, everybody kind of talked a little bit about, well, you didn't get that deep threat. Yeah, but Teddy Bridgewater doesn't have the best deep ball, never had one coming out of Louisville, but he's accurate in the short to intermediate passing game, and that's where I think Treadwell is absolutely going to shine. I don't know if he posts great fantasy numbers, Brandon, but I like the fit.
Yeah, you know, I think he could put up very solid fantasy numbers. Whether he's top 10 or not, I don't know. But top 20, I think, is very, very much in sight for Treadwell. He'll get those wide receiver one number targets, which I think is important. I think last week you and I said we'd love to see Treadwell in Minnesota. It's just a perfect fit. It's, you know, he runs those short to intermediate routes. Fantastic. He goes up and gets the ball. And then you got Teddy Bridgewater's got the accuracy to place it in a spot where only Treadwell can get it. I think it's a great fit. And I think long term, he's going to be in the wide receiver one discussions, even if as a rookie, it takes him a little bit to pick it up.
The Treadwell's going a little bit after Corey Coleman, which I think is a little bit odd, but I think he's the one. Treadwell is the one where you look at all the group of the four number first round receivers, and he's the one that has the most obvious path to leading his team in targets. I think Coleman has a chance to do that as well. I mentioned the Josh Gordon concern, but I think Treadwell. You know, you're looking then at Will Fuller and then Washington's Josh Doctson. Those guys are going to be competing for the number two spot. probably in their offenses. So if you want a fantasy starter at the receiver position, he's going to need to see real world number one receiver type targets. And I think Treadwell has the best chance to do that.
Meanwhile, Houston took Will Fuller, and Brandon, I'm not necessarily high on Will Fuller's fantasy projection. One, while he is a burner, he had trouble with drops at Notre Dame. And then also you got DeAndre Hopkins playing opposite him. Now, I guess you can make the argument that Will Fuller will see plenty of targets since DeAndre Hopkins will be bracketed in coverage, but I'm just not enticed by Fuller's fantasy profile heading to Houston.
Yeah, I don't like the drops. I didn't like him as a prospect because of that. A lot of the same issues you have with Corey Coleman, I have with Will Fuller, which makes sense to me. Brock Osweiler, I'm also not real big on. So the idea of Will Fuller as a rookie with the drops coming in, making a big impact with Brock Osweiler at the quarterback as a wide receiver two in the best case scenario on the team, I'm not very excited about him. I'll let somebody else draft him.
Yeah, and he's got to get by Cecil Shorts, and if Shorts is healthy, he's probably a better receiver. And Jalen Strong is also there. He could make a leap. So, Fuller's got some work to do to win that number two spot.
I really like Tyler Boyd winding up in Cincinnati. The Pitt Panthers played a pro-style offense. He set a bunch of school records for them, had a little bit of trouble early last season off the field-wise. I believe he had a DUI, but Tyler Boyd's a really good player. I could see him being a late-round sleeper. Your thoughts on him, Brandon?
I think so, too. Wildly productive is kind of the way that I describe him. I think he's the leading Pitt Panther in history. I think he was more productive than any receiver ever there in that program. I also kind of like Cody Kaur, not to jump into other sleepers, but the sixth-round pick Cincinnati brought in out of Mississippi. Both those guys are going to get an opportunity to fight with the likes of Brandon LaFell and Brandon Tate and James Wright and Greg Little for a starting job opposite A.J. Green. And one of those guys is going to come out of it. I think Tyler Boyd is probably the most likely guy to do it, and I think he could put up the kinds of numbers that Marvin Jones was supposed to put up sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think Boyd has a better chance to be the number two in Cincy than Fuller does in Houston. I just feel better about his situation and the competition he's facing. Brandon LaFell was fine 2 years ago for the Patriots, but last year didn't look very good. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if Boyd has a good offseason that he'll be starting in 2016.
Speaking of maybe starting in 2016, Josh Doctson winds up with Washington. Now, they still have Pierre Garçon. They still have the other receiver there. I'm blanking on his name.
DeSean Jackson.
Thank you, DeSean Jackson. But, John, it looks like maybe Doctson, if his wrist is 100% and he says it is, he might carve out a significant role for himself.
Yeah, and this is the fourth first-round receiver that we're talking about, and I just wanted to bring up one stat. I was tweeting this out on Friday as the draft was kind of proceeding, and since 2010, there's 9 first-round receivers that were drafted outside of the top 10 and played 12-plus games. So we're not talking about guys that missed due to injury or whatever, but they averaged 51 catches for 679 yards and 4.8 touchdowns as rookies, and those are number 45 receiver numbers from last year. So you're looking at a low-end wide receiver four. That's what you should sort of expect. I mean, you might get some guys above that, you might get some guys below that, but on average, that's what you're kind of getting in that group. Even if you go back to 2000 and you look at the 38 receivers taken outside the top 10, they averaged 39 catches for 550 yards and 3.4 touchdowns as rookies. And Twitter followers like, why are you comparing people from receivers from 2000, 2005 or whatever to now? And that was a good point. I mean, it's become more of a passing league. And as you can see, the numbers have risen a little bit and rookies have become more able to come in and have good seasons. But, especially for these guys that are the number two or are going to be fighting for the number two, number three jobs, you can't expect starter numbers out of them. So Doctson, if Pierre Garçon's on the roster, which some people are calling for his being cut, but I don't think he will be. DeSean Jackson, Garçon, it looks like Doctson will be the third receiver there. Maybe he works his way up to the second receiver role by the season's end, but I wouldn't be expecting that given the other receivers. Those guys are seasoned vets, and they're still relatively productive. In the case of Jackson, he's very productive still on a per-target basis, so I'm not expecting a whole lot of a Doctson this year. What about you, Brandon?
You know, unless an injury to DeSean Jackson happens, I'd have to agree with you. I doubt they cut Garcon. Like you said, I think he costs like $8 million or $10 million this year, but I don't know how much of that he actually gets to save. He might get cut. Depends on the dead money there. But unless something like that happens, I agree with you. I don't see Dotson just overtaking one of those two guys for a starting role this year. Now, Garcon's contract is up next year. So Dotson 2017, I love. So I'm grabbing him in dynasty leagues. But as far as immediate impact, I'd be a little concerned.
And then Brandon Giants nab Sterling Shepard. Now he's going to have to compete for targets, as John noted in his article, with Victor Cruz opposite of Odell Beckham. Sterling Shepard's got a ton of speed. He's got some playmaking ability, but probably a better real-life player than a fantasy player.
Yeah, straight-up slot receiver. So he duplicates a lot of the skills that Victor Cruz has made popular in New York. You know, they seem to like those small, shifty receivers in New York. So I like Shepard being able to come in and contribute and make good plays for the team, but I agree with you, better football player than fantasy prospect at this point.
Yeah, I mean, looking at Victor Cruz, that's kind of – if he's back, then Shepard's going to be at best the third receiver. But if Cruz continues to struggle with injuries, then you could see a bigger, much bigger role for Shepard immediately, because Ruben Randall's gone. And Shepard would be filling that slot role. And that's Ben McAdoo's offense there in New York. He comes from Green Bay, where they used – Randall Cobb heavily in that role. So I would be shocked if he has a really good fantasy year. I mean, this is the last, two or three years ago was when Odell Beckham hit the fantasy scene, and this is the same team. So they're not afraid to give a rookie receiver, especially when they're high on, a lot of targets and a lot of work. So we'll see how Victor Cruz looks this summer. And I think I'd be drafting Shepard late if Cruz looks like he's struggling at all.
And then one quick note on Michael Thomas. John, you write he's going to have to beat out Willie Snead to become fantasy relevant as a rookie.
Yeah, Marcus Colston is gone now. Obviously, Brandon Cooks is most likely to lead them in targets. You have Kobe Fleener coming in at tight end, so there aren't a ton of targets there for a third receiver. He's going to have to beat out Snead. And Snead actually was quite good last year, production-wise. So that's really an interesting competition to watch, a position battle to watch there. What do you think, Brandon?
I agree. I think Brandon Colbin also isn't automatic. I don't think it's an automatic that Thomas beats out Colbin. So until I see him now, Colbin's got the talent to be the possession receiver, that Marcus Colston style player in that offense. So it wouldn't shock me if he beat those guys out. But until I see early indications of that, I'm not going to put a whole lot of draft capital into him.
All right, John. Hand out your warning right now about fantasy tight ends.
Don't draft a rookie tight end, since they'll probably just let you down. Don't do it.
Okay, so I'm fantasy player, fantasy player X here. What about Hunter Henry? What about Austin Hooper?
Well, Henry is behind Antonio Gates, so it would take an injury there even to get him on the field with any kind of consistency. Maybe you could pick him up if Gates is struggling. You could give it a shot, but it's really been a long time since anybody has posted tight end one, starting tight end numbers, top 12 numbers. It was Heath Miller back in 2005, so it's been 10 years when he finished 11th. And the last two guys that even finished with TE2 numbers are Zach Ertz and Jason Morrow, and those guys finished 23rd and 24th, respectively. I just want to remind you about Eric Ebron, Max Williams, both going to good situations, highly drafted picks, and not doing much at all as fantasy rookies. It's just how it is with the tight end position. What do you think, Brandon?
I agree. Austin Hooper will probably make me bite a little bit, especially in fantasy leagues where the roster's big enough for me to have two tight ends, which isn't every league that I enter. I would have him as a very late round second tight end in case he booms in Atlanta, since nobody else is there. But yeah, I think outside of Austin Hooper in that very low level excitement, I nobody I'm looking at this year.
I think Austin Hooper probably has the best long term potential too. Even though Hunter Henry went before him, Matt Ryan loves to throw to his tight ends, as we know from the Tony Gonzalez days. While Kyle Shanahan doesn't overutilize the tight end too much, Hooper has a clear path to starting this year, with Jacob Tammy kind of being at the end of his career, and then Levine Toilolo not being a great pass catcher. So I'm with you, Brandon. I probably will bite on Hooper, but then again, I'm a Falcons fan, so I'm kind of biased too. So take it for what it's worth. Before we move on to fantasy defenses, Brandon, give us a sleeper or two that we haven't discussed yet.
Sure, and, you know, this always comes with the caveat of these guys are deep, deep sleepers, guys that, you know, you need to watch. But one of the guys in the sixth round, San Francisco drafted receiver Aaron Burbridge out of Michigan State. Burbridge, you know, he doesn't have a clear path to a starting role, but Anquan Boldin hasn't quite yet signed. Torrey Smith is going to be the main guy there, but Chip Kelly, he's going to come in. He's going to want to throw the ball. I know the quarterback situation's an issue, but Burbridge, you know, he caught 85 balls last year. If he can prove that he can get off the line against press coverage, then he can, he runs really well after the catch, and he plays bigger than he is in a way that I think translates well as a rookie. So he's the guy I'm going to watch in training camp. And if he starts to pull away from the rest of the pack and earn that wide receiver two job, assuming they don't bring back Bolden, Burbridge is a guy that I'm going to consider maybe taking a flyer on really late. The other guy that I wanted to bring up, Wendell Smallwood, the running back from West Virginia, he was drafted to a Philadelphia Eagles situation where you've got Darren Sproles, who isn't really an every down guy, and you got Ryan Matthews at the running back position, who, let's just say, has been a little injury prone throughout his career. So Smallwood kind of has some of those Darren Sproles type of abilities. He runs a little bigger than he actually is. He cuts on a dime. Had 1,500 yards and 9 touchdowns for West Virginia last year. He could play in several different parts of the game. And if Matthews gets hurt, I wouldn't be surprised to see Smallwood get a big workload. So as a handcuff, definitely, and then as a late-round sleeper, I might take a gamble on a guy like Smallwood for Philly.
John, any thoughts on those guys, or are you just going to – write down Brandon's
I'm just going to write it down and file them away.
Use them against me. All right, let's jump into some fantasy defenses before we close out the podcast. John, which defenses will improve via the draft? I know that you have some things that you want to add to this combo.
Yeah, so I actually want to get your opinion. We talked about all these defenses, I think, when we did the free agency discussion. And, you know, I remember I was looking at the salary added, net salary added on the defensive side of the ball, and the Giants, Raiders, Jaguars, and Buccaneers spent the most on defense and free agency, and they also targeted defensive players early in the draft. So it was definitely a theme for these teams, and I want to know which of these teams, if any, or all of them, are going to be fantasy sleepers this year. Giants used three out of their first four picks on defense, to a cornerback, a safety, and a inside linebacker. The Raiders used the first three picks on defense, a safety and two defensive linemen. Jaguars used the first five picks on defense, taking cornerback, Miles Jack, outside linebacker there, two and three defensive linemen. The Bucks used the first two picks on defense before taking a kicker in the second round. So we have to discuss that. And finally, the Bears. I know, Anthony, you mentioned the Bears, but they used, on the last podcast, we talked about this, but the Bears used five of their first six picks on defense, outside linebacker, defensive tackle, inside linebacker, and two safeties. So should I be targeting these guys on draft day?
Well, yeah, you got to target Roberto Aguayo from Florida State. They had the kicker from Tampa Bay. He's an instant impact fantasy player. I love what the Jaguars did. The big question with Miles Jack, obviously, is the knee injury. That's the only reason why he slipped into the second round. I mean, I think, Brandon, you know better than anybody, he could have been a top five pick easily. He was that good. And I think had he not suffered the knee injury, he would have been one of the better players to emerge from this draft. That's how highly I think of Miles Jack. And then adding Jalen Ramsey, who slipped to the Jaguars with pick number five, that was huge. I mean, at one point when the Titans still owned the number one pick, some people considered Jalen Ramsey a possibility at number one, even though we haven't seen a cornerback ever taken at that top spot before. So two big, big additions to the Jaguars defense, and they improved over the offseason, John, as you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago. The Giants, Eli Apple, I didn't see him going number 10 overall. I thought there was better cornerbacks available, specifically William Jackson, who wound up going number 24 to the Cincinnati Bengals. So we'll see. I think the book's out on Eli Apple, and the Giants took Sterling Shepard in the second round. So even though they went three, as John mentioned, three out of the first four picks they used on defense, they didn't necessarily nab some impact players, although I do like the signing of Janoris Jenkins in the offseason. And as you mentioned, John, I love what the Bears did in the offseason, adding two underrated linebackers in Danny Trevathan and Jarrell Freeman. And while Leonard Floyd is a project, if they can just move him into a situational pass rush role, and that's how I envision them, how they'll use him in his rookie year, boy, the Bears could have a highly improved defense. Now, they're not going to be a top 10 unit, maybe not even top 12, but I think that they're going to be at least usable if you decide to go with a two-team approach in fantasy circles.
Brandon, do you have any thoughts on these defenses?
I really like what Oakland's done, and I'm combining the free agency with the draft. You know, they brought in Bruce Irvin, they brought in Sean Smith, they brought in Reggie Nelson. These are all good additions to that defense, guys that are going to come in and make some sort of an impact immediately. In the draft, Carl Joseph is going to pair really well next to Reggie Nelson. Joseph's a physical safety out of West Virginia. You know, had he not hurt his knee last year, I think he probably would have gone a little higher, might have been considered one of those top 10 types of prospects. He can hit, he can cover better than your typical in the box safety. And then I really love what they did with their defensive line. I think Jihad Ward is a guy who's already, he came out of Illinois defensive end. He's already really good at sealing the edge and going up against the run. He flashes the pass rushing ability. And then Shalik Calhoun, the guy they got from Michigan State, he rushes the passer well. So they're going to have Irvin and Khalil Mack and Calhoun all rotating to rush after the passer while they got good run stoppers and Dan Williams and Jihad Ward. So I'm excited about Oakland. They're forming a really, really formidable front seven that I think is going to make a difference and you might see show up a little bit more in the stats this year.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm almost embarrassed I didn't mention Oakland again. I know, John, that you and I talked about Oakland a great deal in our podcast when we broke down the defenses. I thought Reggie McKenzie did a great job, and I'm glad Brandon mentioned Carl Joseph, who when you watch him play, man, they had him everywhere. They had him playing center field, they had him in the box, they had him rushing a little bit, and as Brandon noted, if it wasn't for the knee injury, maybe he goes higher, a little bit higher than 14. So I too like what Oakland did, both in free agency and through the draft. And I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Bucs. I love Vernon Hargreaves, and then he slid down after they traded back with the Bears. He could be a starting cornerback given what they have right now, even after signing Brent Grimes. And Noah Spence, he got into a lot of trouble at Ohio State, but apparently went to rehab, wound up at Eastern Kentucky. He's slight. He's not somebody that's going to play every single down, but he is a natural pass rusher. So every team that you mentioned there, John, defensively, I think, has improved themselves in one way or the other, whether it be free agency and or the draft. So
let me just add one thing to that.
Yeah.
With fantasy defenses, you generally want to follow the sacks, because if the team's able to put pressure, not only do you get a point per sack generally, but if the team's able to pressure the quarterback, that could cause fumbles, sack fumbles, or it could cause the quarterback to throw an interception, which generates more fantasy points to you. Then you're starting to get into pick sixes and all that stuff. So if you look at the top passing defense in terms of sacks last year, you get the Broncos, the Patriots, the Steelers, Chiefs, Texans, Panthers. So those are the top six, and those guys, those teams were all, you know, good fantasy defenses last year, pretty solid to good. So just looking at last year, though, in terms of number of sacks, the Giants were 30th with 23.
Wow.
The Bears were 22nd with 35. The Raiders were 16th with 38. The Buccaneers were also 16th, or I guess they're tied for 14th, both those teams at 38. And then finally it was Jacksonville, right? So 36 sacks for Jacksonville. I'm wondering if, with all these additions, if one of those teams could make a jump where they add 8 to 10 sacks to their bottom line and really turn into good fantasy defenses for 2016.
You know, it might be Jacksonville. Let's not forget that they lost their first round pick, Dante Fowler Jr., last year in, I believe it was the first day of OTA. So they almost get an added first round pick and a top five first round pick to that group, and he is somebody that he played at Florida, big time pass rush abilities. I really loved him coming into the draft last year. So Jacksonville, maybe Chicago could make some noise this year.
It's going to be interesting to watch the. I know the Jaguars were high on the hype list on Twitter, you know, in terms of all the stuff that they were doing, getting Miles Jack after that second round pick. Everybody was talking about the leap that they'll make, and it'll be interesting to see where their ADP lands by August.
Definitely. All right, guys. Great podcast again. Brandon, appreciate you joining us. You guys have a great weekend. And Brandon, I'm sure we'll talk to you down the road.
You too. Thanks.
Excellent. That's all we have for today. 4for4's early bird subscriptions are still available. Lowest price of the year. Just head over to 4for4.com or look for that pinned tweet at the top of John's Twitter page. You can find him on Twitter @4for4_John for more details. Follow Brandon as well @2GuysBrandon. I'm @AnthonySalter if you want to follow me too. So we'll see you next time on 4for4's Most Accurate Podcast.